crouch, bind, set.
Joe presents the House of Rugby.
Welcome to the House of Rugby, brought to you by Joe. This week we're joined by Sean O'Brien and my Saracens teammate, Ben Arthur Earl. Ben, how are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. And also, big news this week, we obviously got you in because you're a seven. You can wax lyrical about this superhuman superstar we have amongst us.
You!
But Sean, you announced your retirement. Is it a good feeling, a tough feeling? How are you feeling about it?
No, I'm feeling good. It's kind of like a bit of weight off me now. Just because it's done now and I can just look forward to the next 6-7 weeks and start planning for life after rugby.
I should say, it has been an incredible run. I find it hard enough to say anything nice to you at the best times, but, you know, past tense, you know, you were an unbelievable player and, you know, your career speaks for itself. You know, British Lions tours, I'm sure we'll see that clip of that try that you show me every week I arrive, the Lions try, best Lions try ever. Let's be clear about that try. Were you just right there at the end while everyone else did some brilliance? And did you start halfway up the pitch while Liam Williams started in his own 22?
I don't know. Honestly. Like, you should know this because you've watched it enough times.
Well, I do know. I just want to hear it honestly from you.
But she's seen where I started. I was actually, I think I was in my dead ball line when it first started.
I was chasing so hard back.
Yeah. I overran it.
Couldn't turn quickly.
And then had to turn back and run the whole length of the
field.
Who
did you overtake? Because you tell me you overtook a lot of players.
I actually overtook Faz, would you believe? Something I didn't think I'd do. Because he's one that'd always be working, but he dropped off.
He said that's bullshit, but you know, just saying what he said.
Just look at the clip closely enough. You'll see me outrunning him, and then he drops off out the back, thinking that we're going to get caught.
But let's dissect try a little bit then. What were you thinking when Liam Williams, you know, doesn't kick the ball and starts running across the 22?
Yeah, the minute he actually didn't look to kick the ball, I was like, this fella's taken off, because he was doing it in training all that tour, and to be fair, he had a brilliant tour. So when he actually broke, I was like, here he goes now, where is he going to go next? And it was literally, once he got past Sonny Bill, I was like, right, turn on the afterburners now and just try and stay with someone here. That was really it. That was my mindset. Because you can see, I actually put my head down to sprint.
That's it, the old forward thing.
Yeah.
Head up and just run to the corner flag.
Yeah.
Or head down.
Head down.
Find the fifth gear.
Yeah.
Off you go, man.
And then there was a few, obviously, into Elliot's hands and... then I just, trail Foxy. It was a simple jot down for me.
You're in the slipstream.
Hell of a try, though.
Yeah, great try. Like, from a fellow flanker, you take anything you can get. And to me, obviously, that's now Sean O'Brien's try, greatest ever Lions try. So, look, we're in the presence of greatness now.
Oh, see? This is why I brought him along, eh? And well done for slipping him that brown envelope. Smart, as always.
Cash payments
only. Cash only.
Especially in Saris with G-Boys.
Oh, there we are. Very of good. Course. Very He's good. Been good to you, and you already have to stick a dagger in, eh?
No, I'm just saying, we'll you look after it. Your finances very well on that end of the country.
We'll move away from that, Shawnee, because we'll get back to you and your retirement and your career. Great career it has been. Ben, another try Friday night for you. What did I say at the time, I think? I've never played a side that drift backwards on their own try line when you're going around the corner.
I mean, it was two backs, and they started in front of the post, and I think when I dotted it down, they were actually nearer the dead ball line. So, yeah, they weren't... I think by that point, they had clocked off relatively. I was just happy it came on at 30 minutes to go, and they looked like they were breathing diesel, and I was like, we're on here. Boys were just gagging to get on because of how open the game was, and it was good weekend.
Getting a bit feisty towards the end, obviously a red card, and obviously gouging me.
That's not a goal. You didn't get.
He was on the tear gas, I think.
Tear gas. Blimey, yeah. Oh well, I got.
What actually happened, by the way?
Oh, I offloaded someone, and the guy just came over to try and stop me offload, and he just caught the side of my eye. But for some reason, it's bruised up, I've been whacked.
Faz gave him an earful, and it was brilliant. It was great to listen to.
Yeah. And how long were you in the hospital for after?
Badly. You've used all your funnier ones up already earlier in the show. That's why you got to keep them, Sean, because they were better. You enjoy a away trip in France?
Every time you play in France away, the atmosphere, by and large, is awesome. Although the crowd almost got on their own back by the end of the game, they're almost supporting us by the end.
Yeah.
It's always good trips, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Clermont is special, though. I mean, you've had some huge games in Clermont. Yeah. The atmosphere for that semi-final, wasn't it, that you won? It must have been electric, because I mean, I played in the semi-final at St Etienne down the road, and it was, think it's a 40,000 stadium, and it was just a sea of yellow and about 40 Saris fans, and I've never heard anything like it. An hour after the kicker, after the final whistle, and they've won, and they're still there chanting, and it's unbelievable place.
Yeah, it's an incredible place. Even walking in for their home supporters, that tunnel that they create, it's a mad place, so it is, because, again, you do feed off atmosphere in a stadium like that, because if you are playing well, there's still a good vibe around.
Yeah.
And when you have those, when you have the crowd quiet at the start of a game there, you know you're playing really well. Mm. But a difficult place to go, all the same. Mm. So, Leicester boys done a good job at the weekend.
I feel like it's the most nervous you are in the warm-up, because, like, you drop a ball on the kick, or, like, say someone kicks to you, you drop it. The crowd let you know in the warm-up, you're like, oh my gosh, we're in for one here. Yeah. Also, the crowd, the stand's like that, isn't it, on the side?
Yeah, I mean,
you don't want him dropping on the warm-up.
He done for a long day. He catch him again.
He had one of them a few weeks ago.
You're right.
Tough day, that.
Yeah, it was a funny one, though. So our man, Damien Penaud, who was in our dream team, long story short, Brive had their 1997 reunion for winning the European Cup, so Damien Penaud's dad was there, Alan Penaud, because he won it, and so Damien had come along. And we're walking out of this bar from our night out, and Damien Penaud is walking with us and everything. And just to give you an idea of how mad it is, there's this van going along, right? And it's going, it's me, Ben, Damien Penaud, and one other. This van is like bombing it along, and suddenly the brakes are screeching on, like, and we're like, what's going on? And they reverse back, nearly take us out, and they're out of the hugger. Damien Penaud. Like, they're just in awe of this guy. And he's like, oh, how you doing? Yeah. And they go, oh, where do you want to go? Would you want to lift? Next minute, they chuck him in the boot of his car along with us three, and we're giving a lift to this nightclub, you know, a couple of, you know, 100 yards away, basically, no further than that. And they're like getting autographs. So they don't give a shit about who we are. They don't have a clue, clearly. But they are just in awe of Damien Penaud and just like happy to drive him around town. They wanted to pick him up later that night as well. They're like, oh, we'll pick you up later if you want. And they weren't even coming to the nightclub.
They're like gods over there. Yeah. In those places.
I mean, we all walked in, and then, like, we didn't see him again for another like 20 minutes. He said he just like was just getting hounded by people as we were walking through this thing. I just felt sorry for him by the end. He was wearing a bright green hoodie, though, so he obviously wasn't going to fly under the radar with that hoodie.
Yeah, I mean, it turned out he was also born and raised in Brive as well, so, you know, he probably did know everyone, their whole family at that stage. But you must have had any good socials in France, Shawnee?
Not after those games, mostly after international. Yeah. Had a few good ones there with the French boys.
In Paris?
Yeah.
Could you see them across the room in the cloud of smoke? Or?
Yeah. Oh, my good God, the amount of fags that were smoked at.
You're not even smoking, you're like, bloody hell, no. I feel like I am at the end of
Bastereau, it. Bastereau, like, if you're standing there, like, you'd have 10 fags in his mouth at the one time. He's like, I don't know if you've ever watched Father Ted, have you?
Yeah,
your man Brendan Grace, the comedian, is on there, and he's trying to give up the fags, but he has like 10 in his mouth at the one time. Bastereau was just like fag after fag, like puffing away.
Fair enough.
It's hard to gauge on a night as well, because if there's a few birds knocking around, the boys are they're kind of taking the piss out of you as an Irish fella. You don't know what they're saying to them. Like, talking.
You're an absolute shitbag. You're just going, ha ha. Yeah, great, love you too, lad. Yeah. Well played today. Well played. Yeah, great.
Yeah. Well, like a few of the younger boys when we were in that club on Friday night, they were quite keen to talk to a few girls, and these French girls, I just felt so bad for them, because they just had these big sweaty rugby lads like spitting in their ear trying to shout English at them, and they had absolutely no idea what anyone
bonjour,
was doing.
Bonjour.
Yeah, you're like that. Yeah, this ain't going anywhere, boys.
Yeah, let me guess, like English but with a French accent. Yeah, classic. Joe Barton.
You want to get a drink?
Why are you speaking in a French accent?
I do not know. Well, I don't know if you boys caught the Alex Dombrandt having a sleep on the way home, and Danny Kerr and Joe Marler playing a prank on him. It's not what you need, is it?
Not in that circumstance. You don't want someone nibbling your ear.
It's Marler's face at the beginning that does it as well. He knows something's about to go down.
Do you think Alex Dombrandt's enjoying that? Or is that like a shiver of like, get off me?
Fendel was on his mind at the time. That could have brought him perfectly what he was thinking about, but we don't know.
It doesn't look good anyway.
No.
I mean, what would happen, Shawnee, if you know, we were on a away trip and I started to kiss your ear, mate? Would you swing for the fence without even hesitation?
I'd probably grab you and sit you on my lap, maybe.
Thing is, knowing you, that's the worst place I want to be, you know, for other reasons.
Yeah. Marla's bad for it as well. He did that Jamie George thing with, have you seen that one? Where they're obviously in that room in Pennyhill. Marla's got the lower floor and Jamie's got the top floor, and Jamie's fully going for it with the Adele number, and Marlon's videoing it as he walks up and gets all the way into Jamie's shower. Only then does he turn around and notice, and it's genius. I think Jamie said he got something like 9,000 followers from just from the video alone. So
he's not upset.
He's not gutted. No, but I was just like, that is like
genius.
I don't know how he's not heard Marla talk, walking up the stairs, then walking into the thing.
Well, he's in the moment, isn't he? He's committed to Adele.
He's fully committed to Go Easy on Me by Adele. Yeah,
I'm sure that Shawnee. You love a sing song, so you sing in the shower.
Yeah.
So if you were in a shared room, someone could catch you probably.
They definitely. Sinclair caught me probably singing in the shower a few times. He always wanted me to video his back when he was walking around the room. Like
his back.
Yeah, his back. He thinks he has the biggest back in world rugby.
I have heard him say
that. Yeah.
Daddy.
Yeah, I mean
the daddy. Yeah. You wouldn't mind video my back like it's I'd be like, what?
But yeah.
He hands you the phone. He says, bruv, just do it.
Bruv, yeah, bruv. Did he burn any incense when you were rooming with him?
No, he actually didn't burn any incense. No, it was hilarious. So, like, because you listen to serious, like, tunes and music, and they're knocking on him half the time, not a stitch on him. Like, you'd be asking him to put on his clothes. Like,
yeah. During the Six Nations when we were in lockdown, and like, obviously we weren't allowed to leave a hotel, he would get, he was almost like, nurturing Ollie Lawrence to be his like young protege of Carl Sinclair Recovery School or whatever it is. And basically one day, it was like on one of the off days, and the fire alarm just went off. And everyone was like, what the hell's going on? Come out, and Sinclair's room was the first room as you went up the stairs. And there's just this puff of smoke. And it turns out that he'd burnt one bit of incense, and it turned out the whole thing, it just caught on fire. The whole place, we had to leave the whole hotel, like, because the incense had set off all the fire alarm. And it was just leaking down the thing, and it stunk. It was honestly horrible.
Back to pranks here. I mean, you like a good prank, and knowing you've got a construction company, I would have thought you'd be quite good for a good prank.
Oh, like, I got done badly. I've got done badly. I've never really done people badly, because really? It just takes too much time. But I've got done badly in...
Because you're an easy target, or...?
Yeah, maybe. In the World Cup, actually, in New Zealand. I remember, like, I was young. It was 2011. So I was there. We were there a week in Queenstown at this stage. And it was just a week before the tournament started. So
isn't the story that Stephen Ferris told me when you got stitched up.
Yeah, similar story. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. So we were in this bar.
From a horse's mouth.
We went out on the piss the first night we got there. And the second day, a few of us went for another few beers. So we 3 days of just like chilling out, doing all activities stuff. So I went into this bar and I met this Canadian girl and two Americans. And there was a few of us chatting away anyway, whatever. Like, as the night went on, we left. But the next day, I was after been chatting to one of them for a while, and I don't really remember the end of it. Like, and we all went back to the hotel anyway. But the next day, I got this message on my phone. I was like, hey, good to meet you last night. Must catch up with you during the week for a bit of dinner or whatever. And I said, yeah, perfect. Said, lovely to meet you too. And I was thinking to myself, which one? Like, I can't remember exactly which
too
one.
Too many women after you, eh? Yeah, no, I get it, sure.
I can't remember, though, the number. I didn't remember, exchanging numbers. So the next day, a couple of days passed, and I got another message then. And it was like, fancy meeting up tonight. I'm free. And I said, yeah, sure. I was off. I'd not to lose. I was a young fella. I was getting a bit giddy.
The boys will love this.
Yeah. So rocked up anyway, got on my Sunday best clothes, aftershave all over me. And at this stage, there was a couple of more messages coming through, like going, like, can't wait to see you, very excited. And I was like, this is a bit strange, like, first time meeting someone. So rather than walking down the main street to where Lone Star was, where, like, we had been a few times, I went up the back way and back down behind it. And just as I got to the restaurant, I was like, heard this bit of a commotion at the back of a bus. And I looked, I kind of stepped to one side of the footpath, and about 25 of the squad were there, ready to jump out. So I went, oh, I'm done here. So I walked down anyway towards them, and they just jumped out and they started giving it loads, like, and I was completely, I just went red, like, and back to the hotel with me, with my tail between my legs. So there was no bird, there was no dinner, there was no one I gave a number to, thankfully. But yeah, Mike Ross was the instigator of the whole thing.
He's a funny thing. Yeah. It's funny because the story I heard was there may have been some pixelated pictures back and forth. But, you know, I'm going to leave it at that.
Don't let the truth get away from your story.
No, this doesn't go out after 10 o'clock. So let's leave it at that. I'll leave you
don't
imagination.
Worry, I didn't send any pictures.
But we'll move on. Any pranks to you, Benny?
No, I've got. No, I can't even top that. That is genius. Ooh, that is
my grass.
So
yeah.
Good.
To be fair, mine aren't. I like messing around, but I'm not that creative. Mine are more like me and Chris Ashton.
This is genius.
We went on a trip to Bordeaux, France, about 5 years ago, whatever it was, and we decided, like one night in, first night in there, we wanted to go and get Jim Hamilton and Kelly Brown's bedrooms and like tip them upside down, because Jim hadn't been with us or something on the drink, and he'd been like with the coach or something, and we were annoyed him. Well, yeah, exactly. So we got into his room, flipped his bed, and Ashy, feeling like he wanted to be the wet bandit, started putting their pillows and duvets in the bath. Anyways, so we did that, and then there was all this commotion, like, who's done this next day, what's going on? Jim's like complaining that he's had to sleep with like a towel, which is like a tea towel on him for the night and stuff, and he's got a shoe as a pillow. Anyways, not happy with that, me and Ashy think, well, we've got a flavour of this now. So the second night, we proceeded to do two other people, and then two of the coaches as well, because we just, I can't remember, was one of the coaches, Kev Sol, had said something, and we just thought we'd flip his bed. But we started to think that it would be quite obvious it's us, so we then tactically flipped our own beds as well and took a picture and went, oh, lads, who's done our own beds? So everyone was like, geez, who has done this, right? It was like this secret, like, genius moment, until we got back home and there was claims of bullying and that we had to have a full team meeting because of our behaviour.
Actually,
there were 33-year-old men in tears in the team room in front of 18-year-old academy lads being like, this is the best thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, I mean, most of the players were laughing their heads off, but I think Mark McCall wasn't happy that we'd done the coaches.
It was a serious issue.
But one of the coaches said, I just felt really part of it for once. Like, I was one of the lads, yeah.
Back in the players' school.
We used to tie up Rella. Do you remember? Rella, our bagman for Ireland for years and the Lions. But any nice hotel we got into, we used to strap him, tape him to a chair, like an office chair, like properly strap him up, gag him, put tight hands and everything, put him in a lift and send him to the ground floor.
Oh my
and then
God.
Just wheel him out into the lobby. And we usually had the general manager tipped off to just leave him there for 10 or 15 minutes. So people would start walking by him and they're going, what is this fella doing tied up here? Like, but in Shelburne, imagine the Shelburne Hotel in the middle of the lobby. Oh. Nicest hotel in Dublin, and there's this fella tied up with duct tape.
Well, what was, did he care, or did he quite like the crack?
Like, he just never, just he never genius. Fought it whatsoever. Like, his room,
the old reluctance. Oh, yeah, don't do it. All right,
exactly. On. Every night before an international, you'd go and get your jersey in his room and your shorts and socks and stuff, and he'd have jellies and chocolate and everything there for you. So it was like a real good evening together before. But as we leave the room at 10, half 10, we would destroy the place. Like, bed upside down, everything. Like, bed outside the hotel, everything. We'd carry everything out, like. So he'd get back. And there'd be nothing for him. He'd have to go and fix it all again. But, yeah, we used to have great crack with him. But like, Rally embraced it. I actually think he liked the attention.
Yeah, he probably eventually, you either have to, or it's tears, or you have to laugh about it, really, and go, yeah, love it, lads. Yeah, keep doing it. Yeah. Goes back to his room.
Yeah, he's probably upset.
We've obviously had a few weeks, but we played at Tottenham Stadium, Spurs. You enjoy it?
It was brilliant. The highlight for me was, like, it was all in one place, and we'd have the canteen, and next to the canteen, the adjoining room was like a dark room with maybe 20 sofas and, like, 50-inch TVs on every wall. And the boys, honestly, were just sitting there and we were just watching the golf, watching the rugby. No wonder we had such a slow start, because honestly, I reckon half the boys were still thinking about how nice that sofa was. The boys were honestly having a little kip out there. So
the food was too good, honestly.
Food was too good. The boys were too full.
It was so nice. Everything was amazing. That
did you stay there the night before?
No.
Just that day? Like,
just the day, but still, like, it was still...
It was lovely.
The showdown.
Showdown
Part 2. Yeah.
No, it was good. It was, and obviously... If we'd have lost that game, we might have viewed it very differently. So luckily, thankfully, for once, we had the rub of the green. So,
But you got MOM again. you know, it's 2 in 2 weeks. That was.
It was the romantic MOM because obviously it was my old team, so that's probably.
You're
probably
playing well, Ben. You're playing well. Sean, he's been saying how well you're playing on the pod. You know, you
that's only because he had my number up when we played him the other week. So that's, you know, I'll give him that.
Jeez, don't, one thing he needs to learn here is don't play to his ego. Because
I'm hoping for a job on the Diggers.
No, what you're hoping for is he'll give you a compliment back. And he's like, no, I am bloody amazing. No.
No rooms on the JCBs now.
No, he pays very low wages, so he maximises profit.
Okay, but yeah, it was a good day. And obviously,
it's a great stadium.
It was a great stadium. Fans were brilliant. Atmosphere was actually awesome. And I think just everyone enjoyed it. I didn't actually get a glimpse of the longest bar in Europe, but I would have. Apparently, it was mega.
So, Ben, now we're talking about you. This is your life or your career. So, on the script, it tells me that you're really good at other sports and blah, blah, blah. Every rugby player says the same. But just get out in front of the camera and tell us what you were really good at and how great your parents thought you were.
it definitely wasn't rugby to begin with. It was much more cricket and golf, probably mostly. Played a load
Manly
of cricket.
Sports. You can see the way you play,
mate. Tell the torn story.
Yeah, exactly. It says everything you need to know. When I got to about 16, 17, I had to decide between rugby or cricket. Well, I was about this size when I was about 11, so rugby was quite more of a natural path for me. So, I haven't really looked back since, but yeah, still mad into my cricket, mad into my golf. So,
surely you're choosing golf, right? I mean, I
was nowhere near good enough at golf.
Yeah, I just wanted to get that out there. Okay, but happy with rugby now?
Yeah, I've loved it. I've had a short career so far, but I've, you know, made some great mates, experienced some unbelievable things. Obviously, spending a year away from my home club and experiencing a few ups and downs with them and whatever. So, yeah, I've loved it and wouldn't change it for the world.
Just talk us through that. Obviously, for people who don't know, you spent your whole sort of academy life with Saracens, young life, and then you go on loan for a year at Bristol and then you've come back. What was that like going to a new club, having only been at one club and the transition, not transition, but the sort of change to a different environment and then coming back again? And two clubs run very differently, I assume.
Yeah, like I say, it was very different. I mean, at Saracens, it was, you know, I kind of joined what we describe as a journey, you know, quite late on in terms of a lot of established leaders, a set way of playing, a club that had, you know, been very successful in the past, and going to Bristol where maybe there wasn't as many experienced heads in the change room, wasn't necessarily as an established culture, so very much at the beginning of their journey and a very different way of playing. So I really enjoyed it, and brand new city. Obviously, we were in lockdown for a good chunk of it, but you know, when I got to experience the city, a mad rugby city, and made some really good mates there and had some really good memories. You know, obviously a bit of a sour taste in terms of ending it with that, you know, that comical game against Quins at Ashton Gate, and you know, one that you'll probably always remember for the wrong reasons, but it was still a brilliant game. And
why is that? Because you're really good celebration, or
really good celebration that aged really well. You know, when you're given it the "Are you not entertained?" after 3 minutes, and then lose it in extra time, you know, it didn't age that well. So, but no, like I say, it was a good day, but a shame just to be on the wrong side of it. And you know, I like to think that if we'd have maybe got to the final, we'd have probably gone on and done a job there. So, to lose that was gutting.
And coming back to Saracens, obviously probably a slight adaptation coming back, and then just must be really happy with your form.
Adaptation wages. More money in your account now again, thankfully.
Ridiculous.
It's the only bit he ever has, mate.
Highest paid player at Irish. What's he talking about?
Per game, he was up until Jan. And then they had a back row crisis and he's played a lot since. But before that, he was the highest paid
player. Did you not get pay cuts? No.
Mate, I've seen the way you are with Decky, mate. You're right in it. You're one of the coaches. He'd love to get you off the wage bill, but he's like, I quite enjoy Shawnee around the place. He's got some entertainment value. Coming back to Saracens, though, and your form's been fantastic. You must be really happy with how you're playing and, you know, really putting a statement down.
No, I'm loving being back. I love being back in London, close to my family, with my mates again. And, yeah, it's been brilliant. I think we've had an overall very successful season so far. You know, we've spoken a little bit about what we're trying to get after over the next month or two. So, you know, watch this space and we'll see how we go.
And any initiations when you went to Bristol? Or?
No initiations when I went to Bristol. We weren't really allowed, like, social events. There was a big fines committee at Bristol, led up by Dave Atwood, who was, you know, like, almost brought the lawyer side into it. So it was tough. I mean,
Pat doesn't really like
lads drinking, does he?
No, it's not massively into like that side.
Even though
of
he was a madman himself when he was playing. Like.
Well, it was funny because like
hilarious. I find that very funny about coaches. Like you're a lunatic on the beer yourself, and you do like
they forget
go all
in
over
seconds.
London like yeah. on yeah. the when he was in his Northampton days, and then he gets into a coaching role and like no, I never did that. No crack allowed.
Well, like it would be funny because we would always everyone kind of lived around the Clifton area, mostly the players, because we were so close to the training ground. And, you know, we'd have a tight game on a Friday night and they'd be like, oh, you know, make sure we're all about recovery. We've got a big game next week, whatever. I was in the co-op, you know, getting my standard peanut M&Ms and some giant buttons for Max, because that's all he can eat after a game. Look to my left, there's Pat with a 24-pack of cider, and he's off he goes. And I was like, he was like, oh, you know, I'll finish them during the game, watching them back. And I was like, oh, how many times do you watch a game? He's like, just once.
24 in a game. It's 80 minutes because you speed up.
Before we play is mental. So I was like, you know, a fair play. So
that's 1 minute, pretty much. But yeah.
So yeah, maybe that's a little insight to what he can get.
He was drinking for the whole team.
Yeah, exactly. He was making up for it.
But you did have initiation coming back. To
I had initiation coming back. The season ended on the we had that comical game against Quins on the Saturday, and then because you boys had done the graft and won the championship on the same day. I came to the social on the Sunday, said my goodbyes to the boys and came to the social on a Sunday. And first thing I did, no one spoke to me when I first came back. And Mako stood up and said, you know, Benny, mate, you know, great to have you back. We've watched you on TV. Can you just stand up and sing the Bristol victory song, the Blackbird song by, I can't remember what it's used by now. I'm not going to do it now.
No, you said you would before. Sure. Just give us a little rendition.
No, I'm not going to do it now.
Mate, you've done it in front of everyone in the whole South.
I'm standing in.
Really?
I'm standing.
Come on, Benny. Here we go. No, Benny, come on. Just give it. How's it even start?
No. And I'm standing on a pub there in this corner, rammed with not just Sarri's boys, but rugby fans all over the place. And, you know, well, and the rest, yeah.
You've given it a good belt.
You've
also given it a bit of spice because it was a Monday. It was pissing with rain. There wasn't one person coming past. It was just Sarri's lads.
It felt like the whole midday on a Monday, and I was hating every second of it. But other than that,
loving every second. Because
Max decided to give that one a miss, so I was the only one copping the heat. So it's nice. Yeah.
Rightly so.
Ben, what's Goody like around the environment? Like, is he actually as boring as he is here, or is he good fun?
Nah, I mean. Well, Goo's one of like the stalwarts of the Sarri's journey, isn't he? Like, he's a legend of the club, obviously. I would never say this to his face, and I don't know why I'm saying it now. But
because we're in the lift scheme together.
Yeah, exactly. He's driving me tomorrow, so that's why. But no, I mean, like, everyone respects Goo for what he brings, not only on the pitch, but off the pitch as well. Like, he tends to head up a lot of the social activities. Usually he has some sort of mad fancy dress idea. I mean, there's one story that jumps to mind. I mean, I think it was when we won the Champions Cup Premiership, and we were categorically told it wasn't fancy dress, right? You know, said, do not turn up a fancy dress, come in your gears. Next thing you know, we're like, where's Goody then? Because no one's seen him, and everyone's like, oh my God, we're going to rinse him when he arrives, you know, fines for being late. All of a sudden, we're in a bar, and he steps down this thing, and he's like, is that Goody? He's dressed as the Joker when he's walking out of the hospital. He's got the doctor's gown on, and he's done his face paint, got the wig on. I mean, honestly, boys were like in stitches.
He's an attention seeker, really.
but like, you know, everyone was like, fair play. But then, you know, the skeptic come on and be like, he just wants the attention here. He wants everyone to know that's Alex Goody in the thing. I mean, you talk about that and keeping his gear on after the Newcastle final for 36 hours.
Taps on the back.
You know, he's famous. He's maybe famous for the wrong reasons, but nah, he's brilliant to have around the club. And I know for the backs especially, he's a great you know, sounding board for a lot of the younger guys and does a lot of work with them. So no, he's good for the environment for sure.
What do you reckon then, Goody's? What's he like in the piss?
Well, Ben's good. He's got that young energy that I can't keep up with anymore.
The 23-year-old.
You know that a man who is just, he doesn't want to miss out when you're that age. And I don't think that's about it. But he comes in and he comes with energy and you think, you won't last the pace, right? He just can't. Like, you experience mine, go, but he's still going right at the end. You know, I'm tapping out, going, you know, I've not got it in me anymore. And he's just still, you know, leading the charge.
To be fair, when you're 23 to 20, like 5 or 6, you have a lot of energy to bring, like, to the crowd.
Hangovers don't hit you. No. And, you know, and everything's just brilliant as well. Everything's
you're happy,
of,
like.
Yeah.
Happy. Especially when you're single as well.
What worries have you
makes
got?
Makes you more happy when you're single.
No, yeah. It does. I'd say, like...
but there's no, nothing to worry about in life.
I would say I'm in that age now where, like, we've had a few socials as I've got a little bit older, and, like, the expectation on you, like, to really drive the energy within the the group is... And you feel it, you know, you have to... You do have to perform. You almost, I don't really care what you play like, as long as you bring the energy on the socials. So there's a handful of us that honestly take it upon themselves to... Whether that be the first ones there to have beers or, you know, be that mental person that's still having beers on the Sunday morning. So, you know, I'm taking on the mantle, you know, maybe a couple of years that I'll calm it down.
But it's a good time to move on to you. Your career has been incredible. You know, probably didn't give it, you know, the credit at the start of the show. You know, you've achieved so much. I mean, 126 Leinster caps. That's actually not that impressive because you were there for 20 years. But 5 league titles, 4 Champions Cup medals, 2011 European Player of the Year, 56 Ireland caps, and 2 Lions tours, particularly impressive because one was a winning tour and one was a draw against the All Blacks, which is very rare to come by. But when you look back, you think you're just, you know, full of pride?
No, I am very proud. And to be honest with you, it wasn't until I announced retirement that I actually thought about some of that stuff. You don't really think about it from day to day or what you've done in the past, really. It's always, as an athlete, I think you're always thinking of the next thing. How do we win this or how do we get here? So it's been quite nice the last week or so to, you know, see the nice things that have been said, but reflect as well on your career. And I'm very, very happy with my career. Mm. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's all that really matters. And I was like... it's nice to have it out there now that I'm retiring. It's nice to look forward to life now after rugby again. But yeah, I am incredibly proud of what I've done in my career, and from the area I'm from as well, it's kind of bigger than me and bits and pieces like that. It's massive from where I'm from at home because it's a real small town in a small county, and just the lovely meshes and stuff I've got during the week, it kind of hits home with you then again of, okay, you've done well for not just myself but for everyone else around the area too.
I mean, and that must be, I mean, I was going to say, like, you know, you've had so many ex-teammates, stars of rugby reach out, but it's probably those messages from home, you know.
There's a lot of people actually messaged me about how they gotten into rugby from my area, and it was because of seeing me as that young fella breaking into Leinster side, etc., and coming up through the ranks. That's why they started coming to Tullow Rugby Club, for instance. That's why they started supporting Leinster. And it's them meshes that you're actually, it's amazing to see that you can have that impact on those type of people. So it's been brilliant. It's been very humbling the last few days, getting those meshes, and it's, yes, nice place to be.
I won't go for standout moments, but just talk us through, like, you know, that first Leinster cap, do you remember it? And that first Ireland cap, you know, what were they like?
Yeah, I remember the first Leinster cap against Cardiff in 08.
Did you know you were definitely going to play, or was it?
No, you never really knew with checks because he could do anything. He might put you on for like 60 seconds. So I got on in the second half of that game. And my mindset at that stage was to make an impact because I had like Rocky Elson, Shane Jennings, Jamie Heaslip. Who else was there? Kevin McLaughlin, who was like a solid 6 at the time for Leinster. So it was a hard back row to get into. So I was just like making impact. Any minute I get on, making impact. And then the following week, I played the Dragons and I started that game and I scored my first try that night. But I was like, I was busy all night. And then I was like, right, now I'm here. Just staying, just keep my foot in the door. So I remember a few bits like that, but no, I've had some incredible memories throughout the years. I'll go out on a happy note.
And what's the biggest thing you put your success down to? You know, obviously you've had some great environments from Leinster and Ireland, but you know, the intrinsic stuff that motivated you, really.
Yeah, I think I've had a lot of really good players around me as well. That's been a big part of it. Like the likes of O'Driscoll and Leo Cullen, the O'Connells, the Heaslips, Shane Jennings, for instance, he was brilliant as well. Owen Redden, class player. So I've had a lot of experienced heads around me when I was a young fella, and I've learnt a lot from them of how to lead, how to play in big games, and there's been just so much of that. I suppose the big thing for me is I always worked hard. I came from that kind of background at home on the farm. My parents always worked hard, And I probably had a chip on my shoulder in my whole career as well, because at the very start of it, people were saying he won't make it. Like, so I kind of wanted to prove them wrong as well. So there's many factors, I think, but a lot of hard work on him and a lot of graft.
And it would be remiss of us not to mention the Lions Tours. You know, they are the pinnacle of a Northern Hemisphere rugby player's career. Yeah. And you were a star on two tours. I mean, let's just break down the Australia one first.
Yeah.
You know, to win a Lions Tour is incredibly special. And what was that tour like?
It was brilliant. It was literally, I suppose it was 3 years after or 4 years after I got my like first cap for Ireland. So I hadn't really thought about the Lions until I was established in the Ireland setup. But it was an incredible experience. The crack we had on that tour was phenomenal. Like, I mean, it was ridiculous.
You were single, weren't you?
I was, actually, yeah. I was rooming with Alex Cuthbert as well, so definitely helped things.
Usually goes hand in hand with you, with good crack being single. But
the rugby was good, but it was actually the first time I ever experienced as well being not a starter. I was so established that time in the Ireland team. I was like fully convinced there, even though Warby was captain, I was like, I am going to fit into this back row somewhere. And I remember the first week leading into the test game, I was like flying and training, really, really sharp. And then they announced the team and I wasn't on it. I wasn't even on the bench. And I remember going to Graham Rowntree afterwards and I was like crying. Like, I was like welled up. I was actually upset. I was like, what do I have to do to get on this team? And he was just, keep doing what you're doing. And I remember the following Tuesday in training, because Mako actually were doing this breakdown drill, and Mako hit me as hard as he could hit me over a ball one time. He actually said to me afterwards, I thought I broke your back, and I took this ball away, like stole this ball. And I just had a massive week of training that week. And I said, and then he actually sort of like got injured then. So I was definitely, I knew I was definitely going to be involved in that second test. And I was like, right, now is my chance. But it was just, it was an incredible tour for lots of those reasons. So I was happy, obviously, to be playing in those test games. But the crack we had, the people that were on it, that's what makes the tour. And then obviously to win the whole series was class. Like, it was unbelievable for a first experience of the Lions to actually win one. And then in 17, it was just...
Well, 17, you went in there, it hadn't been quite as, you know, an easy run. You had a few injuries.
Yeah.
You know, you're playing against the world's best, no doubt. They're the best team in the world. At that point, Ireland hadn't had great success against New Zealand necessarily. And, you know, it's a different prospect.
I thought, actually, that group, I thought when he selected everyone on that tour, I was like, this is the best players I've ever seen together. And I was like, that's why I was like kind of upset after the tour about not winning it. Because I thought with the group of players we had at that time and the people that were in the room, I was like, we'll definitely win this tour. In my head, like, I was like, there's no doubt about it. So the people were, obviously the players and the people that we had were class, and the tour was class as a whole. I think just going out there and putting your best foot forward in their own backyard, who are an incredible team, obviously the All Blacks, was like unbelievable. And it was my first ever time beating them as well, because the Ireland team had beaten them, but I wasn't involved in Chicago and a few bits like that. So for me, on a personal level, it was unbelievable just beating them for the first time after a few attempts. But the tour as a whole was incredible. And I suppose when you reflect back on it, like going into New Zealand's backyard and drawing a series isn't the worst thing in the world. Lots of teams go over there and get spanked. So not having that and being competitive the whole way throughout it, even in those, you know, the Maori games and against the Crusaders, that was like a test match that day, honestly. That was my first game on the tour because I'd been nursing myself back from an injury. But we hit the ground running, and it was funny because Gats on that tour was, in 2013, I didn't really speak to him that much. He's not one of your, like, if he has his few favourites. In 17, he was like always talking to me, and I was like, well, I'm definitely in a better place now in terms of leadership and the fact, okay, well, he knows I'm training well and coming back to a bit of form. So it was nice to have that confidence as well.
And Benny, you know, what were your memories of Sean playing, especially in his peak? You know, he's young. He'd be a good age. 17 would have been a good age. Yeah, 5 years ago, you know, what, 18?
I mean, I actually almost went with the blue scrum cap with the Sean O'Brien look myself. Similar height. Similar, you know, size, like, so. Nah, but I mean,
neither a lineup option, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
as much as you can otherwise.
I would say, like, the 2017 Lions Tour, there for me, Sean, again, I wouldn't have said this to him, but he was probably the best player in his position at that time. Coming off the back of that tour, you know, everyone would say Sean O'Brien was probably the best seven in the world. So that's probably the biggest accolade you can say about him after that tour, because you think about the people that he was not only playing against, but also in that conversation with. I mean, that back row of Sean, Faletau and Warburton is like, you know, you got three of the all-time greats there. So, I mean,
it speaks volumes there. Yeah, exactly. You know, Warburton was, you know, captain, but you two, he had to find a place for you, yeah. And even at his expense sometimes, you know, which is amazing. But
yeah, so I mean, brilliant. And you know, even now is a mental challenge to play against him, as we experienced the other week. So. So yeah, nah, like an idol for, you know, kind of a lot of that young crop of English sevens coming up. You know, we didn't really have a huge amount to look to in terms of our international team at the time. So then you have like Sean O'Brien playing for the Lions was obviously massive for us.
I think what I'll always remember is there's very few people I've seen in rugby through the 2010s-20 who properly accelerate into contact that last yard, like want to like smash through you. Most people all slow up a little bit, or you were someone who would get the ball and you physically wanted just to go through the you were aiming to get to that wall there and nothing was going to stop you. And some of your carrying in like was just the physicality of it was unbelievable.
You on the receiving end of that or?
No, not really. By the time I started to play against him, he only had half a hip, and
I was on one leg weirdly
because he's, you know, yeah. Didn't work so well. But
yeah. You've given me the compliments now, so come at me with the rest of the stuff.
No, I don't need 2019. Well, <on, laughs> moving on. We've got some fans' questions.
Time you cheated.
Ah, there we are. I should say on behalf of everyone here and everything, it's a great career, and we congratulate you for that. And what you've given to the Lions and Ireland is, you know, immeasurable. And to London Irish now, and then still.
And the pod.
We'll be seeing him on the pod. He's not going anywhere. Hopefully we sit together a bit longer. He can put up with me. But we've got some questions here from Simon Morgan. He asks, what is your most embarrassing rugby moment for either of you or both of you?
I'll go. Mine's probably like not as big a stage, but I remember coming up about 20 years old, and I was we had a big game against Sale in the Prem Cup, and it was kind of a game where, you know, the coaches really look at you in those games, because Sale away, as we'll all know, is a very, very gritty place to go, and it's about 10 all. We're right in the fight. We've got a young team against quite an experienced team, and for some reason, being the show opponent I am, I get a 2-on-1 on the right hand side, and for the life of me, I still don't know why, and I cringe just thinking about it now, but I tried to throw it out the back. Just like that, it went straight to the floor, and we end up losing the game 13-10. And I've never lived that. I apologise to the team. First and last time I've ever apologised to the team in terms of like that was the worst moment at the time. That was the worst moment of my life. Probably one of the worst moments of my career still. So, it was an embarrassing moment for me individually. And obviously, it then got brought up in the meeting afterwards, which is great.
Yeah, it's lovely when you see them back. Mine would have been against Bath in the Heineken Cup. They were kind of like a bogey team for us for a while, but we were playing exceptionally well that day. Had scored an early try, they kicked a penalty, and then we had them at sixes and sevens on the 22, and I got through the line and literally had a six Leinster players versus two, I think, off the bat, and I completely fucked it up. I mean, I just ran. Close. I ran way too far with the ball. Like, I was like, I just should have. The minute I got through, I should have just hit the man outside me, and we would have walked in. And I remember afterwards, similar to Ben, I remember afterwards sitting in the meeting on Monday, and I seen the clip, like, it was froze, and I was like, I know what's coming here. I was like, you just want the ground to eat up, like.
You want to be at the back of the room, underground somewhere.
I learned from it, don't worry. If I ever got through, then I just never passed. I just ran straight over.
But I would say like those experiences though, like, they are without doubt your biggest learnings, because like you then. I've never thrown out the back. Yeah, exactly. There you go.
I've seen you throw some crap off like this, but not out the back door.
But yeah,
for sure.
So yeah, like they are embarrassing at the time, and obviously you'd love to have that moment back, but you learn so much from them.
Yeah, I rate the fact that you both had these moments in professional rugby, because when I see embarrassing moment, I think of my mum used to struggle to get like the grass stains out of my shorts, and she thought one week she'd be really clever, and she put them in bleach, and he's like these white shorts, and she was really proud the next week, look how white my shorts are for the first time ever. Honestly, the first tackle, when I was 14, my shorts just disintegrate on me, and I'm in these like little white fronts running around, like, and my mum's just rolling around and laughing, thinking it's hilarious, and I'm just like, classic, I'm running
supportive
around
parent and all, yeah, that's perfect.
That is embarrassing.
That is embarrassing. Yeah, you know,
that is embarrassing. That's far worse than ours, no way.
A few showers. Is it cold outside, Goody? Okay, Viv Roberts asks, who was the one player you dreaded being in camp with but turned out to be a very good laugh?
Dreaded to be in camp with?
Was there anything you thought was a real nose or didn't really fancy?
Jesus, there's not too many, to be fair. I used to, I roomed with Mike Ross, and I kind of thought Rossi was like a real tech guru, like. So he was on his, headphones, laptop. He'd have a couple of things going here and there. But he was actually a really good person to room with. Really good fun in the room, actually. And late at night, just to get him off his phone, I used to, come out of the shower or whatever. I'd have knocked on me, and I used to have a little naked wrestle with him. Not that he wanted to have a wrestle.
But love a wrestle.
I'd jump in on top of him.
I just love the fact that he would have had clothes on, and you were naked, because that's you.
One of the boys videoed at one time. It was absolutely hilarious, because he's so focused on what he's doing, on the laptop, and next minute I come running around the corner and jump in on the bed, start wrestling. And you know the fright that you get. He was someone who was a great crack around camp as well.
Did
Rossi.
He have a hairy back as well?
Oh, Rossi's pretty hairy. Yeah, I don't know if he's a hairy back, but he's hairy in general. Yeah. But he was good. He was good fun.
Peter Lowry asks, best back row players you play with and against.
Against McCaw and Pocock. Just incredible. They're everywhere. And then played with Stephen Ferris and Jamie when we were in the back row together. That was a nice combo. And then Rocky Elsom, to be fair, I didn't play with him that much, but
he was good in that year.
To see a man sit on the sideline of training every day, didn't train. He's used to sit on his bag or sit on his boots and then just come up at the weekend, was a silent assassin in Leinster. Literally, not a word of him during the week. Had everything locked away at the weekend, all his detail, and then he just turned it on match day. He was incredible. So to have the odd training session we did with him, he was phenomenal as well. So he'd be one as well.
Last question was, any regrets at all?
No regrets as such. The only one thing that bugged me was not playing that Argentina game in 2015 in the World Cup. I got banned for the punch on Pape the week before. And we lost that game by 4 points, and we had Paul O'Connell was injured, Johnny Sexton, P. O'Mahony, myself was banned. I think it was five of the starters. And I had such confidence in the team and in probably myself at the time that if we'd one of us playing, we would have probably beaten Argentina. And that's just the thing that bugged me for a while. That's why I was hell bent on getting to the 2019 one. But obviously with my hip that didn't happen. But that was the only thing that if I could relive that moment, I probably would.
So the Women's Six Nations was back this weekend, and there was a record crowd at King's Home to watch England play Wales. England won 58-5. Shaunie, what did you make of the game? You watched it?
Yeah, again, they're just on a different level to everyone at the minute. It doesn't matter what team to put out either. I think they've really, really, really depth in their squad now. Just their set piece and the way they move the ball is phenomenal. They're big, they're physical. They're fast. It's class. It's class to see. They're like a machine at the minute, and I genuinely don't think I don't think France will stop them either.
Okay, so do you think there's a worry though for England? They're peaking too far ahead of the World Cup, and that New Zealand now have gone into Super Rugby games and they're now getting their standard back up again. Do you see France or New Zealand as their main?
I think that'll be the three. But I just think England are gone a step above everyone else at the minute. And I don't think they're peaking too early because it's too short of a turnaround for the other teams to come back and catch them now at this stage and to make up the differences in squad depth, the way they play the game. They're all on the same page, the detail that's in their game. You can see it. They're just, they're the team now that everyone needs to get to. But it'll take time. I think they're so far ahead of everyone else in the women's game at the minute that they're just going to be unstoppable.
I mean, that Simon Middleton, the coach, I don't know if you've watched any of that Red Roses inside line that they've got going on. He just looks like he would he's just not going to take any prisoners. Like, he says they're the best team in the world, hardest team to get into. He's being frank about it, but it just seems like you drop off in your performance and there's someone who's playing just as well, if not better than you, ready to take your spot. So, like Shawnee said, I don't think it can hurt. The more they play together, the more depth they have in their squad, that's only going to bode well.
And how good is it for the women's game to have a record attendance outside the World Cup game this weekend, that many people watching it, seeing how good the standard is? You know, it's only going to help the game.
I think that's it. I think it's just like, there just seems more awareness, more support, and a sort of realisation that actually this is good. This is a really good standard to watch. It's competitive. And also it helps that, you know, England are, you know, when England are good at a sport, you tend to really gather interest. So, I mean, it's one of the best. England's support is thicker, isn't it? Because when they're doing really well, you're always going to have loads of support. And I guess that's then just snowballing that effect that, you know, people are just going to get better and better.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And as Ben said there, that it's an advertisement now for the game. You look at this on the TV, it's a product now. They have like a good product that they're showing. They're showing how to play nice rugby, exciting rugby. I think that's probably part of their DNA now as well. They don't want to play a boring game. They're certainly not playing a boring game. But the fundamentals of the game is where I think they're just so, so strong at the minute. And that's leading to exciting rugby. The physicality of these girls as well is ridiculous. Like, you look at some of the hits put in there at the weekend even, and you're thinking, sure, she could like mix it in any training session that we'd be involved in. I genuinely think that about some of them.
Yeah, there was talk a few weeks ago about England 20s training against the women's national team. Would you be an advocate of that?
To be honest with you, in a weird way, yeah. Because if they're finding it hard to get like competitive games or like a 15-on-15 against each other, or they don't want to do it that way, well, why not then, if it prepares them as best they can for, you know, what lies ahead? But I wouldn't fancy training against them. Like,
I don't see the downside.
I think it just takes the contact out of it, but you don't see a downside. Yeah. It just also puts a marker on them. But, you know, everyone is talking a lot about, like, oh, you know, where does this match up, men and women's game? It just creates more awareness in terms of, like, you know, where is the women's sport compared to potentially the men's sport in terms of.
You can have an open training session. Yeah. It brings more people to the game.
Yeah,
you know, 100%. I think it's great for it.
Could be good for it, yeah. Yeah.
And other news as well, France beat Scotland, so they're now level on points with England. It does set up a winner-takes-all sort of game there. And Ireland picked up the first win of the tournament, 29 points to 8 against Italy.
I actually think Ireland have taken a step forward in the Six Nations. I think some of their attack has taken a step forward. I think they're expressing themselves a little bit more. There's some brilliant offloads. Sam Monaghan, actually, she plays at Wasps. She's been on fire these last two games. And have scored some nice tries at the weekend. I know it's against an Italian side, but still it's a development that Ireland are looking for and to get better every week. And I think they've taken a step forward last weekend in the Italy game, and they'll be looking forward to the next few weeks. And it's nice to hear actually the players doing interviews afterwards saying that this is the journey they're on now, actually saying we want to improve, we're trying to get better, and taking that little bit of ownership. Whereas previously in the last 2 years or so, there was none of that in interviews. They were nearly afraid to say what they were thinking or to express themselves. So hopefully that's the journey they're on, and it started now, and we can crack on after what's happened, I suppose, over the last 12 months with Irish women's rugby and the report that came out. They can park that now and just get better and better and better, and hopefully, you know, hopefully in the next couple of years be able to challenge England and France at a really, really good level.
Well, that's all we've got time for. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Sean. This has been The House of Rugby. Find us on Joe YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcasts from.
You've been listening to The House of Rugby on Joe.